It is Thursday, the 11th of June 2015, and this is episode 249 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another sunny episode. Happy summer. I'm Chris, joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris. It's hot.
Yeah, it's warm. Temperate. Just in time for my European trip to Zandvoort.
Is that next weekend?
Next weekend, yeah.
Wunderbar.
Yep. There we go. Fun, fun, fun. Not as fun as they've been having over in the States with WWDC. They've been chuffing about lots of things this week. They've talked about all their kind of latest releases in developer world. So OS 10, going to call it El Capitan.
El Capitan.
Due out in fall, but if you're a developer, you can have a preview now. They're going to do a public preview in July, something like that.
Yeah, yes.
July. Offers some nice improvements in performance, and they've kind of added some extra, what they're calling experience in there. We might as well just quickly cover off what they covered off, yeah?
Have a quick whiz.
Spotlight. So they've kind of built in much more into Spotlight, so you can search the web, it's intelligently search your documents, pictures, they got weather, context, sports results, things like that. Make it a much more useful search place and a bit more generic search rather than just for documents and files and things like that.
And it's all that Google did it the week before, Apple doing it this week, see it in iOS as well. It's all this context stuff as well. Mm. So you can say, you know, give me the link for this, please, or go and do that with that, and it knows what you're on about.
Yeah, so much more natural language searching going on, what you're typing in and stuff like that. I did like the shake the mouse and make the mouse. So this is, you know, when you first arrive at your PC trying to find your cursor, everyone does that. Do you not
they
do that?
They do.
I thought it was great. It made me chuckle.
Yep, I was watching it and going, for Pete's sake, is this really require an operating system update? And yep. Then the next day I was sitting at work and on my three screens couldn't find a mouse. And no, I was like, yep.
Everyone does the mouse shuffle. So if you wiggle your mouse, you know, when you do that wiggly thing to make it obvious where the cursor is, now the cursor grows on a Mac so you can actually see it. So it made me chuckle. I liked it. It made me delighted. I don't know if that was a word they use anymore. Anyway, right, mail, gesture support. So you can swipe left or right, depending on whether you want to bend or mark it as unread or delete it, basically. With all these kind of gesture things, that there's quite a few more gesture commands that we'll come on to. None of them are obvious. None of them are intuitive. That's my only problem with them. You know, there's no obvious way of... if someone's new to it, how are they going to know to do that? Anyway, that's beside the point.
I think it's the same for a lot of... apps now, and it's the same in the watch. There's lots of things where you need to experiment, and it's like you're
which relying. I guess it's one way of, you know, practicing, yeah, and just seeing what happens. But
you do wonder how much stuff actually never, you know, somebody sweated away in a bit of code, and there's a good, really good feature there, and it's just never used.
It never gets used, because you're not supposed to need manuals. Anyway, there you go. Safaris, you can pin sites now. So these are like tabs, but they are actually pinned. They're actually pinned to the top of your browser. So they're quick access as well. So as soon as you click on them, they do ping up. And when you click in links on pinned sites, the pin still stays there, and that link will automatically open in a new tab. So great for, you know, if you want to pin Facebook, pin Twitter, whatever you want to pin.
Dear Apple, thank you for copying Google. Love, Ian. That's all I wanted to say about that, because I've moved to Safari, moved away from Chrome, and I really did miss pinning tabs. Yeah. I know you shouldn't, but everybody does, and I thank goodness.
There you go. Where else we got? We sort of talked about Spotlight already. Finder's also got the kind of better search integrated, so you can. Their examples were, show me the files I was working on last June, and it will show you any files that you worked on last June. How useful that'll be, don't know.
No, I don't know either. It's
it might be.
It's mean, I use Alfred quite a bit for finding things rather than Spotlight. It's the same. It looks very similar. You know, you can start to. The problem is a lot of the time you're not really saying, "Oh yeah, I need to find that from last June." It's usually you've.
It's oh crikey. Yeah. I think it said Bob in it.
Yeah, and then you end up going, I know it was an Excel. Excel file sort by date. Oh, there it is.
Yeah. Windows management, they've got the Windows 7 snap to edges kind of in there now in their own way. So you can snap a window side by side, which is great. You can adjust the sort of balance of that and it works across all your monitors. So you can, I guess you could snap them on different monitors. Great little sort of animations to do it. It looked good and it's needed. I say it's one of the features I definitely miss.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that will actually do me quite well.
Dear Apple, thank you for copying Microsoft. Love you. And I'm all for it. This is a bit I always hated about Apple when they started start your photocopiers Redmond. And I think we've quoted it a number of times on the podcast, but everybody does it. You know, I don't see anything, give me a richer experience.
So, and as far as performance goes, they've got this new metal layer. I think they had metal before, but they've enhanced it, which is basically takes away some of the rendering off of your CPU and puts it onto the graphics card. I think that's kind of what it ends up doing, but it makes things a lot quicker.
They had a horrible game demo, which was
atrocious, wasn't it?
Yeah, which A didn't look very good, and also B didn't seem to play very well. So
say if you're trying to show off the fact that you've got this amazing new graphics engine, well, you've got to at least do a side by side with a before and after, right? Otherwise, it just looks like a game. Again, like I say, it didn't look particularly exciting.
No, and I thought far more impressive. They talked about Adobe and their they've moved their rendering engines on.
Video showing before and after. That's all you needed. Yeah.
So they're seeing an 8x rendering performance improvement. They're committing that all their Adobe CC stuff is going to move over to this. And it's like, so surely. And they talked about how it only took them, it was a matter of days. And it's like, so why didn't you get them? Is it a pride thing? Get them up on stage and see where they go.
Yeah, they didn't want to get there.
But Apple must be seeing it themselves. And I guess they don't have, they've given up, because previous times I think they would have brought up Aperture. And they don't have Aperture anymore. But surely they should have brought in, one of their Pro Tools, one of the audio ones, the video ones, and say, look at the difference. And maybe they're keeping that. Maybe they're not ready. They'll rehash it again and say, here, it's coming out, but look at this. And hopefully you get to see some real world that's like, here's, under Yosemite, and it took 3 minutes, and here it is, and it's taken me, 20 seconds. Because it's 8x, it's going to have to be... But yeah, it looked nice and it's free and it's out in the fall.
Yep. iOS 9. Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah, so they did briefly show that iOS 8 had a great adoption rate of 83%. But as you've put in the show notes, actually, that's quite low for Apple, really.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people tagged it, and we'll come on to it later on because I've done something about it. But they tagged it with the whole, it needs like 3 GB or 4 GB free. And lots of people have still got 16 gig devices.
I have, yeah.
And it was like, well, I can't get it on easily. It really made it difficult for some people. It's like, do I need to delete photos? Do I need to delete?
Yeah, what do I delete now? Yeah.
Thanks, Apple.
No, yeah, I have got that kind of thing. But iOS 9 they've announced. So basically, new Siri UI, more integrated Siri requests so that you can ask. I think they showed a demo of Show Me Photos from Utah last August. And, it brings up all those things. So it's got that kind of clever contextualness. Also knows what you're looking at when you make a request. So if you're looking at a website, you can say, oh, remind me about this when I get home. And it knows what this means, which is the website you're on currently.
And it also said, queue up an audiobook when you get in the car. And I was like, how do you know I'm in the car? I don't know. Is that only CarPlay cars? It seemed a strange one to give it a headline. And it's like,
my phone knows when I'm driving, but it's, again, only when I start driving, obviously.
Yeah.
So it'll say I'm in driving mode now because it judges what the movement. Proactive assistant, so they're trying to be predictive, bit like Google Now, I guess, trying to predict what you're going to need next, whether that be showing you apps that you're going to potentially, this time of day you normally run this app, or you're getting in the car, so I'm going to offer you the audio sort of stuff.
I think it's one that you have to see.
Be useful for you.
I think it's got a lot of potential. In the same way that Google Now has lots of potential, But in the same way that every time as a Google Now demo, there's lots of, yeah, you're late for your flight, and I'm telling you the gates changed.
Oh, there were endless gates again. Yep. Flights and gates.
Yep, thanks to friend of the show, Roy, who continually points out, did I get a prize for this? And it's like, nope, you just get our endless love and respect.
Yeah, so travel reminders can happen now. So it'll tell you when you need to leave to get to a meeting on time based on your calendar, and it will even take into account traffic so that you won't be late for your meeting. That was nice of it. Caller ID is on phone calls are coming in. It can actually.
It can start to look in mail and see that if somebody's calling you and it doesn't know the number, it can see from numbers that are in mail. You know, so if you've emailed me and you've never given me your what number, and then you phoned me, it'll be like, hey, Chris is on the phone.
Because it's found it in an email or whatever.
Yeah.
And it says, so, perhaps whoever it is. Yeah, okay.
So, and it's all about just trying to make it, you know, a bit more information rich. And it's the same with calendar, you know, it'll now base, you know, estimates based on traffic like Google Now does. You know, a lot of it's catch up.
Three referrals to the fact that all this happens on device, doesn't happen as a data mining center out in the cloud or whatever.
But it's a bit of me doesn't get this.
No, I don't. I don't understand it either.
So does that mean if I lose my phone, does that mean that that's gone? Does that mean that I've got a different experience if I'm on an iPad to an iPhone? It's two different devices. I'm confused.
This is it. Unless they're kind of saying that cloud, you know, your own personal cloud's fine, as long as that information just gets stored in your cloud.
They never made it clear. It's all right saying it's on your device, but I've got loads of devices.
Yeah. I think they cleverly sidetrack the fact that yes, this does actually end up in our data center. We just don't use that data. Is kind of what they were trying to say. Anyway, there were lots of things I was questioning around what they were saying, but they're nevertheless endlessly making that clear that they don't use mine or use your data in any way.
Because the next bit is kind of similar as well. So they talked about this API for search, but it wasn't a search for going outside on the web. It was for searching within apps and for content within apps. So again, it was this whole idea that if you search for, I don't know, well, the example is there, search for a recipe. Instead of going online and searching, you're searching within a database, within an app of recipes, and that's getting, you know, surfaced up to you as a search result.
Which is fine, as long as you've got a recipe app installed, but wouldn't you just go there anyway?
Yeah, and that's the thing that was a bit weird. But again, it's one of these that we just need to see it in actual action. Lots of people were talking about it and all these kind of deep links that you can now add, and lots of developers were like, we have to think carefully about this. You know, there's a lot of potential there. But there's people, I mean, I've copied some comments, and there's people saying this is Apple being really aggressive in Google. They want you away from the browser search. They're wanting you to search, you know, via either Siri or search via, you know, Spotlight, which I think is just called Search now. And they'll tell you based on what's on your apps rather than it going through Google.
That's a fair remark. And it probably is, you know, that is a, even if it's not their direct strategy, that is, you know, where it's going. But at the end of the day, search results live and die by how useful they are. The thing is, if you're only searching a subset of data because you've already got several apps installed on your thing,
precisely, yeah,
it's still got to go onto the net, and then it depends how good Apple's indexes are as to how relevant the information comes back.
Yes.
Notes was apps that they've kind of. I think I have I missed anything?
No, we're on to like the
apps that they released or told us about. Notes.
So notes, I guess a bit more rich. So you can, you know, almost like try to catch up a bit, maybe OneNote, Nevernote. So you can do checklists, you can add photos, you can draw and sketch inside of notes. And if you go back 3-4 years, you could purely just, you know, type some text.
It looked reasonable, whether they've missed the ball, because notes isn't on my daily commute, if you like. But
no,
there's no reason why it isn't, other than it doesn't look inspiring, does it? But
No. So maps, so they talked about how they've got loads of requests, but there's no context to it. So they're getting 5 billion weekly user requests, and I'm sure Google's probably getting 50 billion. So there's no context to that figure. But the big thing they announced was transit directions. And this is initially only on kind of key cities, I guess the point being transit directions, it's a lot to add in, but also they seem to have added it in at quite a detailed level. So they showed you a city, and I think it was New York, they showed you the kind of railway station, but they'd actually gone in and mapped all the entrances and exits so they could tell you, if you come on this train and you want to go to this train, it's a 3-minute walk. And it was a real detail to it. And I'm guessing if you're new to a city and you're trying to connect somewhere, that's kind of important. So it's coming to select, you know, so London, Berlin, all the major US cities. And I guess the big thing is that logic, that layer is there now. So I expect we will see other cities, you know, added in quite quickly over time.
Sure. I guess it just takes time to do the survey, or, you know, cities maybe have that all kind of half done anyway. But no, I know I'm skipping to the kind of story we're going to cover later, but they're going to be doing Google Maps type street view. So they're sending their own cars around. This is what gets me again. You know, they're sending cars all around the world, literally, to go and get the same data that's already been collected. Again, they made it very, very clear that they were going to be high on privacy.
But it's, you know, as you say, it's already been done, you know, so Google do it, Microsoft do it.
So they're endless cars having to travel around the world taking photos of every single street in every single place. It's not exactly efficient, is it? Be better if that was a sub data set that you could buy, wouldn't it? But never mind. That's never going to happen.
News.
Yes, news. Okay. This was mildly interesting. So you can, it's basically an app where you can subscribe to interest topics. And I think some content providers specifically, if you wanted to, but you could say, I'm interested in technology, I'm interested in this, that, the other, select articles, and then it would ping in a very nice, easy to read format. Can still be styled to the kind of look and feel of the provider itself. But I mean, we've seen it before, but it did look quite slick.
It does. And we talked about Facebook a couple of weeks ago, where there was instant articles. Is that the right name?
Sounds about right, if it's not.
And that whole kind of making an article beautiful, you know, and you know, you didn't have all the crud from elsewhere, and you can swipe through photo galleries, etc. And this looked exactly the same. But it did look like Flipboard. And also it was quite hidden at the time, but you can add your own content. So the website's already up that you can say, take my RSS feed. And between, I guess, now and iOS launching in the fall, they're going to do here's the Apple News format, and you can start to structure your content in the right format so you can make some nice, beautiful posts.
Yeah, I mean, most locations now are CMS'd in some form or other, so it shouldn't be too big a project to actually output that in the correct formats. And how onerous that is will depend on how big a pickup it has. But you're still only going to really get the big providers who are going to be interested in this, and whether they are interested in it or not is yet to be seen, I guess.
Well, there's a fair, I mean, I've put the screenshot there. There is a lot of people. So Guardian, Wired, and I'm just looking at, you know, Vogue, GQ, you know, Fortune, Financial
Times. We don't know
how
totally embedded they are, though, and what does that mean for a user? Do they have to pay for all this?
Well, I guess there is some key points. So firstly, I don't think there's any paid content. Secondly, that might change, but I think that's where we are just now. Secondly, they didn't show any adverts, so I'm sure that's why it looked really clean. But since then, it's come out that you can either have your own ads on, or you can have iAds, you know, and do some sort of revenue share. Third, they've said it's private. What you share, you know, isn't read back to. What you read isn't shared back to the publisher, and
which they're not going to enjoy that very much at all.
No. And the fourth thing, this replaces Newsstand. So Newsstand disappears, and Newsstand, I mean, it's got a lot of critics because it kind of hid away content, and I think it was always that: is this the savior of, you know, digital magazines, or is this the future? And it has really, you know, flunked. But it'll be interesting because there are...
It's almost like they've still got that concept in their head, right? That they want to do this news and information stuff, but they still haven't found the format that actually picks people and kicks them in the head, really, and says, that's the way to do it. Newsstand wasn't it, clearly.
So come October or September, because it's usually September all these things come out, there'll be no more Newsstand, which means for me, no more Wired. I mean, I get Wired paper because Wired did the paper and digital the same price. Empire had switched to the Newsstand version. Mm-hmm. So again, I can't see Empire turning around and saying, yeah, our website's there, that'll do. You know, it doesn't work that way. So that's does that mean they have to, you know, stand up their own apps? I don't know. I don't know what will happen.
Yeah, like I say, I know if it is free to view, then I think that these are going to be subsets of the data that's out there, but rather than, you know, fully digitally interactive versions of it.
Yep.
Right, what else? Sorry, I'm a bit lost in my notes.
No, it's okay.
Now.
So they then started talking about almost like some of the, I think they call it foundation. So there's some things like better battery life.
I fell asleep twice during this keynote. I think this may have been one of the points.
I'll be honest, I actually liked the first three quarters of it, and then the Apple Music bit kind of hacked me off. I think it was the same for
we'll come on to that in a bit.
Yeah, so the foundation stuff was better battery life. So there's low power modes, and they're talking about even just with current hardware, you get an extra hour to 2 hours a day, which is quite significant. Yeah. They've done a lot to when it comes to actually upgrading the operating system. So instead of 4 gig, it's now down to 1 gig. So again, that's really good. There's app things, so apps are now taking a lot less space. Gaming, there's some. I think they said there was 6 new, their kind of kits that they call them. So there was like gameplay kit and Model I/O and replay kit, which is interesting. Is allowing you to basically do Twitch, so you can record your games and put them up to YouTube. That's not just for games. So if you want to do I'm sure there's going to be apps now offering some sort of replay kit, you know, mode, so you can record what you're doing. There was HealthKit, new metrics, HomeKit. It was talking about, see, you're on again. This bit, yeah, sorry,
you're playing the same bit.
HomeKit, so doing all your HomeKit stuff via the iCloud, you know, so all that remote, you know, turn the oven on, you know, switch my whatever on, switch the heating on. CarPlay, I still think it's a bit of a dud. One of the big things about CarPlay was we've got all these, you know, we've got more screen support and all these different formats. You still can't buy it anywhere. and you can now, you know, it works wirelessly.
Car integrations at such a slow moving market that it's hard work trying to keep up with it, isn't it?
It is. And it's the same with Google. You know, they're all talking about these things and it's not really happening.
It's too hard because they got a bit burned last time. They put all the iPod connectors in their cars so you could just whack in your iPod and then suddenly all the connectors change. So it's you can't just rip it out and replace it. Well, I imagine they'll come up with some concept where you can do that and it makes it much more sensible. But anyway.
And Swift. So Swift was a big announcement last year with languages. There's now Swift 2, much faster, much better. And it's now open sourced. So later in the year, it'll be out for iOS, OS 10 and Linux.
There you go. And that got a big cheer. Yeah. That woke me up.
So dev beta for iOS is out today. It's the first time there's a public beta in July. So you can go sign up for that
if you want to go and see it early, so that's fine. Yeah.
And it's out in the fall. And I kind of separated it out because it was big for us, I thought. But Apple Pay got quite a big prominent display, and it was a woman on stage for the first time.
I know, it shouldn't be made much of the fact. Yeah, they had lots of women on stage, didn't they?
A woman.
they, again, you don't really want to make too much of it, but it is unusual that it's such a big thing for the Apple to have put, you know, two women on the stage. Bizarre, isn't it? There you go. Apple Pay, again, it doesn't really excite me that much, to be honest. I don't have an iPhone, so why would it? I don't give a shit.
I do. So it's coming to the UK next month.
Why do you care? I can pay with my credit card. I just hold my credit card next to these zappers. It's fine.
Yeah, but I don't need a credit card. I don't need a wallet. I've got my phone. I've got my watch. That's my wallet.
Yeah, but you'll have a wallet anyway.
No, I won't. I don't need it.
What are you going to put your driving license in?
Oh, who asked for my driving license? Come on. Anyway, Luddite. Let me go through why I like this.
Luddite because I carry a wallet.
Exactly.
I tell you what, I'll get on a heck of a lot better in this world right now if I take my wallet. We'll go for a shopping spree, shall we? And we'll see what you can buy with your blooming Apple phone.
Oh, clearly nothing.
And no, exactly.
Next month, only anything up to £20. So I either need to re-queue and buy lots of things up to £20. But we'll come on to that in a minute.
I would like a little bit of this now, and I'll re-queue for the next bits.
So eight banks are supporting it. I think the biggest one that wasn't up there was Barclays, who got a lot of heat on Twitter, and they said, we are working with Apple to try and understand how we work with them on Apple Pay, so I'm sure something will happen. All the kind of main bands are up there and they're supporting it. And lots of vendors. So notable ones like Lidl, McDonald's. No, I'm jesting. So Transport for London, M&S, Waitrose, Boots.
A lot of the food chains. Not a lot you can buy in Waitrose that's less than £20.
Exactly. Like even my coconut milk costs. No, I better not. You think I'm joking as well?
It came too quickly for that to be a joke.
So I am quite excited by this because I do want to go to Marks and Sparks and pay with my watch and just get that look of, you knob, what are you doing?
And you will. That day is coming for you.
So at the moment, contactless has got a limit of £20. And seemingly in September, that was going to 30. But what they're all, almost to a man from the bank's point of view, they're saying is that this is now going to be optional for the retailer to set. So if they want to go higher, they are quite happy that once Apple Pay rolls out, they can go higher.
And it's probably then the retailer that takes. I think it's a similar idea on credit card payments online. You know, the credit card provider will take so much responsibility. But if you choose to streamline your process and take out some of those extra verification steps, then that risk is on you. Like, you know, Amazon does it, skips all your CVV checks and things like that because it kind of knows that frictionless way of buying is better for them. And they take that risk.
Yeah. And the last couple of points, which is going to be wasting you because you like your physical wallet, but Passbook is now dead and it's now just called Wallet, which is what it should have been all along. And you can actually put all your reward cards in it. And I always shied away from reward cards because it's like, I ain't carrying bits of plastic around. I've got enough. But it's like, hey, crack on with reward cards now because they'll all be digital eventually.
Still tracks you, still does the same, you know.
But that was never my reason for not carrying them. I just couldn't be arsed carrying bits of plastic. Whereas you can. You've got a wallet the size of like my head and you've got 500, you know, reward cards in it. And I'm happy that you have that.
I actually don't. There we go. Yeah. iPad then. Let's go on to iPad. They added a few sort of functional things. So do they call it quick typing? So the keyboard's had an update basically. It's got nice cut paste and things like that, options above the keypad, so it's quick to press hello ice cream.
I wish.
And also they did a nice thing where you could use two fingers on the keypad area and it turns it into a kind of trackpad, so you can do easy selects using the keyboard area, and then you can sort of easy select, cut, copy, paste into a different place. So, you know, just nice little addition.
Because it's always been a faff. See, selecting text anywhere, having to click and then try and select it and then click again.
You know that when you got the cursor in the right position, every time you lifted up your finger, it always pinged one character to the wrong direction or whatever.
And it was just like, this is all. So that looks like they've sorted it and they've talked about better physical keyboard support. But I think the big one was all what they class multitasking. So
do you think it's big? Do you think we're beyond multitasking now?
The thing they were under multitasking, there was a few things. So first of all, it was the task switcher, so big full screen previews, and that was like, well, that's fine. But the big one was slide over. So this is basically running two apps at the same time. So you had slide over. You could bring in like another app. So they showed you bringing in messages while you still had I don't know a Word up and running. But then you pull down on the slide over panel, and you could bring in any other app. And then you could tap on a divider and you work on the two apps at the same time.
So it's kind of like the desktop side by side, basically, but in an iPad environment. And it was kind of using the styling that the apps put in for the iPhone to sort of to rejig the size of the screen for you know, your side app, if you like.
And I guess it depends what you do, you know. So the people that I follow on Twitter that are using iOS almost exclusively, because the other bit they added in was picture-in-picture for video apps. So all of a sudden you get picture-in-picture and I can still work on something, or I can still browse the web, or I can still look at Twitter.
And that's something that has always been a bit frustrating on an iPad, right? Yeah, when you say you want to watch a bit of ITV catch-up or whatever, and then you want to, I just want to quickly search something on the internet. It was a pain because you had to actually come out of the app. And then when you go back into the app again, you get all the adverts put straight back in again, and it takes another 10 minutes before you get back to your program. So yeah, that was a good use case, I thought, for the videos. Yeah.
And what they pointed out was the slide over part works on all recent iPads, but the split view, so actually then having two running at once, is iPad Air 2 only, because it's got 2 gig of RAM. Everything else has got just 1 gig.
Okay.
So there's lots of rumors about this big iPad coming out, you know, size of a Surface. I think this is heading in that direction.
Yeah, could well be, couldn't it? Yeah. Yeah, and you could on the video in video, you could move it around as well. It wasn't like locked to a particular place. You could move the video around, resize it as well. So actually, it's quite useful. And they were kind of saying you don't have to really do too much to your app to make it support this as well.
They said that, but some developer tweets that I saw were like, oh.
Actually, it's going to be a nightmare. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but overall, I think they're saying this year's updates are far less onerous than last year's. So from a developer perspective.
Okay. We are droning on, aren't we? Never mind. We get to dwell in these Apple events every now and again. Why not?
It's me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I think we deserve it. Sorry, listeners. WatchOS, they are giving direct access to, native apps, basically. They're giving access to all sorts of the hardware and abilities that it's got. So you can add... they love these complications. And again, you can have your air departure time and gate number and things like that on the front of your watch now.
And I actually thought... So I'm not a watch guy. I thought complications were Apple being, I don't know, a bit arty, but it turns out that's what Watch Efficient Audios call all these little things on the front of watch faces. They're called complications.
There you go.
And I think app developers having their own is great because I've got the weather on just now, so I can see it's 21 sunny, and you can tap on it and it takes to the weather app, but I'd rather tap on Dark Skies to launch Dark Skies weather app, and that's what I'll be able to do once Dark Sky updates and puts a complication on. Yeah. Or I can look and see, oh, my Volkswagen's charged to 89% battery, and I can tap on the complication and then say, set the air conditioning to 23. So that was a couple of examples again.
Yeah.
But I thought that for me was really nice. There was some new faces.
Oh, yeah, so the time-lapse face, I thought it was quite interesting. So they've time-lapsed certain key locations around the globe. And the time of day that you are at, it will show you that. So as the day goes on, you'll see it in different times.
And you can do a photo album face. So like if you've got, a couple hundred photos every time you look at your time, it'll show you a different photo. Which again, And speaking of time, there's time travel. So if you spin through the digital crown, you can go forward in time and see what appointments you've got later in the day.
It's kind of, it bugs me a little bit because, all this is how on a small device do you go to the next, go through the day? Yeah. It's a clever way of doing it, but they put a name to it and everyone goes, that was amazing. Cool. But actually all you're doing is actually, if it was just like a little scroll, you just scroll up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. No, I totally agree. Nightstand mode, so if you put your watch on its side when it's charging, it now turns into a little alarm clock.
Mini alarm clock with your snooze button is one of the, what that button does, the home button, is it?
Yeah, which again, it's a messages button. Everybody thinks it should be the home button, but it's a messages button.
So you've got a snooze and an off. So yeah, great.
And it's great unless you've bought a stand, because almost all the stands have it up the other way.
Vertical, yeah. Yeah, you and your...
Sorry, on you go.
I was gonna say you and your peripherals.
I've not got any. I didn't buy one.
There you go. So you're perfect.
Communication. You can now have two sets of friends. So like work and home, for example. I don't have that many. Digital touch, you can send multiple colors in the one drawing.
Amazing.
Mail, I can reply to mails. Phone, I can actually start a call and do FaceTime audio with it.
Okay.
Health and fitness, so again, this was when they started talking a bit more about third parties, so they can access all the heart rate monitors and all the other bits and pieces on it and contribute to activities. And Siri can start workouts, so instead of faffing around and trying to start something, you can just say, I'm going to run for 30 minutes and it'll kick it all off for you.
It's going to go more and more voice, isn't it? It's got to. That's the only sensible way.
It is.
Even as silly as you will look.
I don't feel silly. Apple Pay, so they're going to support the store cards in the wallet as well. Transit, you're going to see transit lines. And Siri, you can control HomeKit devices. So you can do things like, if you named your light,
Bob.
Darth Vader, you can say, turn Darth Vader on.
Oh, dear.
And again, they emphasize for developers, they'll be able to access microphone and audio and speakers and all that kind of nonsense, and access to health kit, accelerometer, the digital crown. So it seemed, for me, considering it still feels so new, it's nice to know in 3 months' time I'm getting like a fairly
hefty upgrade,
nice apps, and it's all going to be, not just the Apple apps that have improved and functionality's improved, but I'm going to have all these third-party apps actually written natively. And then it was on to one more thing.
Apple Music. Which, again, Basically, here you go. I'm going to boil down what ended up being probably an hour's worth of their, maybe 45 minutes, actually, give them credit.
Yeah.
It's an app. You can stream songs on it, and it shows you some pictures of the artists. Oh, and they've got a radio station as well that they're going to stream.
Yeah.
But and not that just was 45 any. Minutes of people up their own backsides chuffing on about the art and how amazing this thing is. But it's an app. It streams songs. It shows some pictures. And it has a streamable radio.
Yeah, and I think
it costs you $10 a month.
Jimmy Iovine was on. I'm sure he is, like everybody says, he is probably well-respected and great in the music industry, but boy, does he not know how to present. It just felt really...
he wasn't very good, was he?
No. And then it went handing over to Mr. Cuban Dancer, who was just getting on my tits, to be honest.
I literally did get bored in that. Again, that was the second place I fell asleep. It was... You know, they were trying to ramp this thing up as this amazing service when actually I didn't think it was amazing at all. The only thing I could think could save it as far as making it a bit more innovative is if they used had a different payment model. So if I pay for a subscription, $10, I listen to those three bands the whole month, then the element of that payment, which is to do with paying artists, should go to those three artists. I thought that might be a way that this thing could be more artist focused than, say, something like Spotify.
Especially when they brought in, a couple of the kind of music guys who were talking about this is what the music industry needs. Only Apple can do this, and you're thinking this is going to build to something. And the bit that they showed you that was good for artists was this Connect part, which for me, I just wrote it down as it's Tumblr within a music app. You know, it's
done so many times before.
Yeah.
Why, when you've got 15 million people on your, subscribed to your Facebook feed, would you why would you suddenly lock it away inside of a tiny little app?
I know.
That app's going to have reach and it's going to have clout, but it's certainly not the place that's going to get maximum visit. You know, you're not going to make an announcement on that. Where you wouldn't put it out on Facebook or Twitter.
The only thing for me, there was two things, I guess, and it kind of sums up Apple. So nothing's free. So unlike Spotify, where there's a kind of free tier, it's free for everybody for the first 3 months. But then it's either, we now know the UK price, so it's $9.99 a month.
So they've done the dollar to pound conversion straight up against
Norway. $9.99 a month. The one that I think is a bargain, if you've got a family, it's £15, so $14.99 a month for up to six people.
Yes,
that's cheap. You know, yeah. So compare that to the other.
Does it make this app completely useless without that payment, or do they still have the shop aspects of it and the recommendation type aspects? You know, buying stuff.
Does
the radio still stream?
The only thing they've committed to is the radio.
But does that stream even if you haven't subscribed?
Yeah. So the thing they've committed to is you still have. So there's four bits to it. There's My Music, which is your own bot music and playlists. That'll still be there because that's your music. I'm guessing the For You might still be there because.
But again, only for the purchases rather than being able
but
to.
Only for what you've got, or you'll say buy now. New, I'm guessing, will be there because it's charts and what's new. And again, more playlists. The radio, they've said, will be there. And Connect, I'm assuming, will still be there. So it'll still be there, but it's going to be fairly limited on the For You and new parts, where the whole point of it is I just pick a playlist and I want a running playlist, go. And it's going to say, well, you need to buy this. You need to subscribe.
Well, I wonder whether it'll say, oh, I've got to make a playlist out of your own songs rather than including these other streaming type things. Yeah. But I guess they could cleverly handle it so that it does that. But that was the whole thing. I didn't see the amazing thing about this, really.
And so they're saying, a couple of details, 100 countries from June 30th. So we won't have long to wait. We're only a couple of weeks away from it launching. It'll also come with a new iTunes for Mac and Windows. Android app will be out this fall.
Yes, that was interesting. There's
an Android app, and there's also going to be a second Android app, which is about move to iOS. So seemingly they're going to do some sort of advert type app, which is all about the benefits of moving to iOS.
I have to say, I think, the fact they're doing a streaming service, that was what they should have sold, and that's what they should have just bigged up. Or not even bigged up, just said, we're doing the streaming service. The fact that they wrapped it around this whole arsey thing just totally turned me off.
Unfortunately, they oversold, underdelivered.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a streaming service. Great. That is, we've been saying why haven't they done that before? And I guess because they were trying to get artists on board. I don't know.
Even the 24/7 global radio, and it's live, and it's 20, you know, everybody around 100 countries can listen to this, and it's like, okay, so it's internet radio.
Yeah.
You know, so it's internet radio. And yes, Jane Lowe is great, and the producers of Nick Radio I'm not, 1, I'm sure, are great. And
I'm not immediately offended by Zane Lowe. He does a good job. So yeah.
Yep. So all that is like fine, but it's
the bullshit. Oh, sorry, I've sworn twice now.
No,
sorry.
But it is. But
it's the it's the rubbish around. We're going to play only great music. Doesn't matter about genre. Yeah, but who decides what's great or not? You know.
Well, if it's Eddie Q, we're going to get some Cuban dad dancing.
I actually did squirm a bit of that.
So the thing is, I'm not a Spotify. I know you subscribe. I'm not a Spotify subscriber. I tried Google for 3 months, and it was good.
But don't find the use for it, you don't find the use.
Well, I was finding a route for CIFA doing runs and stuff. I actually really liked getting the random playlists and getting access to everything. It was good. But what made me don't sign up yet was Apple Music's coming, so I'm sure it's going to be something. I didn't know what it was, and I'll try it for 3 months again. And at the end of the 3 months, I'll decide is Google better, is Spotify better. I'm going to commit to one of them because I do want more variety.
I mean, the thing is, my Spotify is only the £5 model basically, which is I get to stream it on desktop. I don't get all the access across all my mobile devices and stuff like that. That's where I am, and they're not doing that. They're not offering that intermediate model. They're just going straight for it. It's either on or off.
So my summation, see the first three parts of the developer conference, great. I see all the what's coming in, you know, Mac, iOS, and Watch, lovely. Apple Music, meh.
Yeah, that was exactly the same.
Meh.
Their new developer program, they're combining the iOS, OS X, and Watch OS tools all together for $99 for the year, whereas that was a split out cost. I think you had to pay $299 before to get access across all three.
It was always iOS and Mac, so that's nice. Yeah. I think a lot of people were probably paying for two and they're now just paying for one, and they're getting all three.
Yeah. Spotify basically come out and said, well, actually, we've got loads of users. In response to the, you know, Apple, obviously, in the announcement, they kind of said, look how many users we've got. And they came out with some pretty fanciful figures about how much artists could expect to earn.
Yeah.
When artists are telling us that they earn, like, pennies... they're saying you can earn $1.1 million,
and I think it was worth
maybe it's $1.2.
Yeah, I don't know because it's so so the good thing for me, see the figures announced pretty big.
Yes.
I think everybody's assuming, you know, Apple are going to just own music again, because that seemed to be everybody's before this. It was like, here's Apple saying they own music, and it's like, well, they don't actually. So Spotify are, what is it? It's 20 million now paying for a premium subscription.
And that's paying subscribers. Yeah. 20 million times minimum of £5. It's a lot.
And I don't see Apple grabbing. I mean, I can't see Spotify dropping. I can't see Apple taking people away from Spotify. I mean, the thing that Spotify does, Apple doesn't. There's no collaboration. And the playlists, there looked to be nothing around collaborative playlists. And I know that.
No, it was all sort of expert curated. Yeah.
And I know that might come in a year or two. You know, so I'm not expecting them to do like absolutely everything day one. But Spotify have done that for years, and a lot of people love that. But the as you say, the figures. I mean, it was there it was. A niche indie artist could expect to generate $1.2 million a year.
I'm going to go and ask a few niche indie artists and ask them how much they do earn from Spotify. It won't be $1.2 million.
A heritage artist? I mean, is that Cliff Richard? I don't know. Heritage artist would generate $2.6 million. In the top 100 chart, you could get $3.3 million. It feels like bullseye. Look at what you could have won. Yeah. And a global superstar could generate $13.9 million.
Yeah, but the thing is, times those by just a few artists, and suddenly you're not far off what they're actually earning, which, so that's, it's just rubbish, isn't it? It's basically rubbish.
Yeah.
So don't type anything. Anyway, they have got a lot of users, and they've come and made sure that's clear. More kind of news, more around the peripherals. Adblock has moaned. So Adblock are a service that block adverts from showing on in your browser, basically, or on mobile. And they're not very happy the fact that Apple are going to roll out an inbuilt ad blocker.
Yeah, so basically, this is a company that makes money from stopping other people making money, complaining about another company stopping them from making money.
Yeah. I guess what they're saying is we had this little market to ourselves and we were very happy. Thank you very much. We've got a lot of people riding on this, and now you put the feature in your own browser and we're screwed, basically.
And it was quite a nice little number, because not only were you charging me and you for AdBlock Plus, but you're also charging other companies to add to the whitelist to say, well, you just can't block us.
Yeah, so it's like we're a blocker company, but if someone pays us enough, they don't get blocked.
And there's not enough detail at the moment. All we know is that they're adding in support to allow this, and AdBlock are concerned that not only it will hurt them, but how effective will their blacklist be? You know, Apple's blacklist.
Yes, they're kind of, are they going to be as good as us? I don't know. Probably. Damn. more blocking. Twitter this time. They've put a feature in that allows users to share their block list. So you no longer have to block people individually. You can, as they put it, if someone else is having similar problems, they can talk to someone who's already got a block list set up and import their list into their own account. It's kind of sharing who the people are that are getting blocked.
Yeah, basically, it's how to share arseholes. Basically, they should start up an arseholes, like, you know.
It should be a graphic, shouldn't it? Picture of an arse.
I mean, you should have it obvious. I'm blocked by like 3,000 people. It'd be great.
Some people would go for that, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah. But I'd probably get more people blocking me than following me. That's the reality of it. But I think this was good. I did see somebody saying they exported theirs and it was up at 5,000. 5,000 people that they'd blocked over time, and they hadn't realized it was that many. It's just it was like they've got a fairly somebody's been cheeky to them or an arsehole, block. It's I don't need your life, block.
They actually have people talking to them, but some
people have big followings and then they start asking questions and they don't like it when they get lippy responses, so block.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Anyway, there you go, they can share them now.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there's... Because what stops me and you starting up a website and saying submit your block list and we'll start ranking?
Let's do it.
Yay.
Like that racing site. Reddit, Reddit, more blocking. Reddit's blocked people this time. It's banned a number of groups. I don't know, what do they call them? Subreddits.
Yeah.
So if they were particularly harassing, particularly unsavory topics maybe, or just contained bad content, they have now blocked them and removed them. And it's people are up in arms at this censorship.
Yes. And as expected, it's mostly the big trolls that were on there already that are up in arms about it. And if you look at their T's and C's, they always said, you shouldn't be harassing people. The problem is they've picked in these five groups, but there's so many other groups on there that do similar things. So it's a bit inconsistent. But also the typical response, so Reddit CEO is Ellen Pye, I don't know how you pronounce it properly, and she got loads of harassment, loads of people, you know, I will kill you and do all sorts of things, and many saying they'll leave, and it's like, go. But this was Digg's problem, you know, Digg used to
be the
that's thing.
Why it died in the end, didn't it?
And they started censoring, and people were like, well, we'll go to Reddit, surreal.
We'll see, you know, there is a balancing act between free speech and censorship. It doesn't sound very much like they've crossed that line. We'll see. Fake mobile towers have been uncovered in the UK. These are little devices which basically act like a proper mobile mast. So when you walk past them with your mobile phone, your phone goes, "Oh, I'll connect to that. It's a strong signal." And at that point, your international international mobile subscriber number and your serial number for your phone is collected by that mast, so people can, whoever's running these masts can tell who, well, basically track you moving around London. The the London police have said, we're not talking about those devices. We're not giving any details or commenting. And Privacy International have kind of said, come on, just tell us what you're doing and why you're using that information. But basically, they're tracking people around London.
When I first read this, I thought it was criminals. So I honestly started reading it thinking, what the heck, we're getting spied on and there's criminals. And then I saw the Met Office thing. It was like, we refuse to confirm or deny. And then later on, they said, we're not going to talk about it because the only people who benefit are the other side. And I see no reason in giving away that sort of thing.
So, and as Privacy International said, look, you need to be a bit more transparent, because how do we know that all these devices are yours or not? Because if there are just criminals, like tracking where people are on for their mobile phones, all sorts of information they could be getting from that, as far as who's out, who's not at home, where are they on the way home?
The thing is, the other side probably know this more than we do. You know, the other side will know about this. It's not about giving them an advantage. They will know about this. It's the public should know. Anyway, Cox.
There you go. Broadband. There's new rules going to be brought in, which allow you to back out of a broadband connection if your contract for the broadband, if that connection falls below a certain speed or doesn't live up to what it was sold as. And previously you could do that, I think, within the first 3 months, something like that. But they've extended that. I'm not sure quite how long they've extended it, but it's much longer into your contract now. You can still back out.
Length the whole contract.
There you go. So during the contract, if your speed is consistently poor compared to the advertised rate, you can pull out.
And that's coming in from January. And there is another new rule coming in from the 20th, which you can, another company can force your current provider to give you all the details. So in the past, it was always a bit, you had to phone them and get some details and do all sorts of stuff. Don't need to do it anymore. It's all should be the other company can just go and do it. It's a bit like the bank switching, which I did earlier this year, and it was actually very simple.
It does look like it's easy now. Yeah.
Oh, I was amazed, because I've put it off for years, and then I was like, do it, and it was really, really good.
And this is all to try and kick this lot. Everyone does a lot these massively long contracts now, so the idea is that all these things are going to keep things moving and mobile, therefore keep the deals going, and keep the market fresh, basically. BT going to do a 4K sports channel in August to stream football
and rugby.
Don't watch that either, really. I watch bikes. Maybe when they do 4K bikes, and I've got a 4K TV, and I care.
But I mean, is it going to be like 4K snooker? Is that going to?
That'd do it for me.
4K darts.
You do need to have a BT TV Ultra HD set top box, and you also need to be on. Is it their broadband?
Need to be on BT Infinity
broadband. Yeah. Still, I still fail to see how a proper uncompressed 4K signal can even come down the latest broadbands. I think it's going to be tight.
And I think we just need to wait and see results. So what they're talking about is Community Shield. So that's in August, will be shown. And there's other live events from UEFA. So I guess the big change this year is that BT now have all the UEFA games, and all Champions League games. So Sky have nothing. And the terrestrial broadcasts have nothing. It's all BT.
BT are doing a good job of hoovering enough up that it is some, they've brought things in that they want. My only bugbear with them is that I have to pay for all these football just to get my motorbikes, and I don't like that.
Yeah, and I might actually be tempted to buy BT there now.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Okay.
There you go, so they've tipped it for you. Oculus have had a some sort of announcement, basically, and they've released or revealed their consumer ready Rift, so the one ready for to be sold.
Yes, so this has just happened tonight. They've showed you the final headset, which has now got some cloth around it, which was slightly unexpected, but then nice. It's got the headphones, it comes with a camera, and it's now got two OLED screens. So I think in the past it was just one screen.
One big one, yeah.
There's now two OLED screens. And they're saying next week at E3 there will be lots of chance to try it. The thing about tonight, they also said the headset they've made more comfortable, so there's a bit more adjustment in it. I think previous one was a bit kind of ratchety and
there wasn't enough adjustment in the eyepiece, and it says they've made more ground up on that area as well.
I still think a bit like me, any glasses wearer is going to struggle with these. They're not going to be comfortable for glasses wearers. The surprising bit, and the one that feels like they've kind of jumped the shark slightly, was they made a big deal about today they would show you the controller, because I've never really showed a controller before. And you know, I know Valve and HTC's thing had a controller, and the controller's an Xbox One pad. So they're doing a tie-up with Microsoft, and they said, look, there's already a great VR controller out there. And it's like, well, it's not a great VR controller. It's a great pad. But is that necessarily a great VR controller? And I guess that's up for debate.
Who knows what a VR controller is? You know,
they are right, though.
But
the Wii, surely the Wii stick thing was a great VR controller. Surely something that you can go anywhere in space is a great VR controller. Anyway, so the Xbox pad was there. It's like, that's fine. And then Phil Spencer comes on. It always looks like a... Anyway, so he comes on and says, you know, Oculus, full support on Windows 10. You can, you know, lots of, you know, you can use your pad and you'll be able to stream from Windows 10 and do all sorts of things from Windows 10. But then they also said, and by the way, you'll be able to stream games like Halo to the Rift.
What?
Exactly. Because I was like, they've pulled out of the bag. Considering Sony's been working on the Oculus for so, not the Oculus, no, Morpheus for so long, and Oculus has been talked about. And I thought, wow, that's massive. And it shows you a demo. and you basically will play Halo on the Rift in a cinema room. So that's the...
As I think I said to you before, it's a bit rubbish, basically. But having said that, I think the only saving grace, as I said, and you laughed at me, is the fact that it will make the Halo screen look massive in comparison to looking at my little tiny TV.
And as I said to you earlier, it's the only way you're going to get 1080p gaming in an Xbox.
I'm just looking on the site now, and it does look like they've also got additional controllers which are trackable in space. They've got their kind of tracking LEDs them. So yeah. It looks, and they're it's almost like a split controller where you've got a D-pad and something here and and the other side of the pad on the other piece. So I think they are thinking along those lines as well. Excuse me while my throat disrupts.
No, that's fine. I just thought see the whole Xbox announcement. It was
disappointing. Yeah, for sure.
It's like the Xbox CEO, whatever you call him, has had on his thing, I need to do something in VR. We need to have Oculus support.
Yeah, that's
tick. I've got Oculus support.
Don't knock it and see it. I mean, the integrated sound and stuff all looks great. It does look like a consumer ready product, but obviously that doesn't count until you actually get it out to consumers and you've got.
And they also showed some game demos tonight. The one that's from the kind of space game that's been shown for quite a while, which I can't remember its name now, but it still looked awesome. It looked fantastic. The other demos, I was a bit surprised, and I saw some comments. And I was like, maybe it's just I'm overestimating it, but they were doing things like, you know, Tomb Raider type games, and it was all in third person. So you had your headset on, still watching a character.
Yeah, which is, like you say, that is a bit strange, because part of the immersiveness should be this first person.
But then I think there was some comments from people saying, but if you think about when somebody's running and the amount of bobbing and weaving and head movement, it is maybe just too much. It is maybe just and that's what people are thinking.
All these things will be sorted out in time as to whether it's a sensible thing to go first person or not.
Because if you look at the space game, you're in the cockpit, and what you're doing is you're moving your head around, and it's slow movements, really. Although there's lots happening outside your cockpit, you're mostly still focused on what's up ahead, and every so often you'll glance around, or what's behind me or what's above me kind of thing. Whereas if I'm running, all that movement, maybe they've just found that is too disorientating for people. I don't know.
We will see when we eventually get hold of one.
And I'm sure we'll get more reactions, I'm sure, later on today, but also next week, because, as I said, E3, so there'll be a whole load of...
Yeah, looking forward to E3, actually, see what they come up with. It's about time for them to come up with some good games. There we go. Right, let's try and keep this under an hour, then. Have you got any picks? I don't think we should have any picks.
No, none.
Great. So let's say, if you want to find out more about us, you can do. DigitalOutbox.com. You can info@DigitalOutbox.com us. That was an email address, by the way. Twitter was Digital Outbox. I'm on Twitter, kind of, at CheesyUK. And my blog is academyracer.co.uk if you want to follow on with all my racing antics. Where can we find you, Ian?
Blog, Ian.net. Twitter, super.
Wonderful. I think we've done it. We're under an hour, which is good. Speak to you next. In fact, it won't be next week. So it's going to be a couple of weeks, I think, before I can get back. We'll talk together and we'll see whether we can figure out a date. We'll talk to you soon. Ta-ra.
Bye.